Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, April 6th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Election Stretches On for Coos Tiratilli in Normal. Mayoral Candidates' Sights on Absentee Ballots, Final Results. By Derek Bay. Normal. Mark Tiratilli wants a recount in the race for Normal mayor, whether he wins or not. If we stop with it being so close, I think there would be a lingering question of, is that really it? He said Wednesday. With a recount, we leave all traces of doubt behind. Details of that recount's procedure, cost, and duration remained fuzzy, however, the day after Tiratilli and incumbent Chris Coos finished Tuesday's election with 3,106 and 3,113 votes, respectively, a photo finish for the town's top office. McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael said her office, which administers Normal elections, is still figuring out what happens next. She's never handled a recount in a decade in the role. She knows the first step, wait for absentee ballots. While 13 absentee ballots arrived Wednesday morning, 22 still remain outstanding, more than enough to swing the race. Those must be postmarked no later than Election Day, but have 2 weeks to arrive. After absentee ballots are counted, Michael said, either candidate can request a discovery recount by May 1st. Someone has to let us know, I want to come in, and they get to pick 25% or less of the 30 precincts in Normal to review. They took a look at those ballots under supervision. That's a charge of $10 per precinct, she said. Then it gets expensive. The next step would be a full recount, which must be requested in court. But how long candidates have to make that request, how the work would be paid for, and how long it would take has not been determined. There's a lot we still don't know, Michael said. When asked how he'll proceed, Coos said, the count on the absentees will probably tell that story. If I've won the election, I'm certainly not going to do anything, he said. We would probably do the discovery and then make our decisions after a loss. My sense of it, honestly, is that you won't find anything in discovery, but who knows? If you're a person that's that close, it may be worth a look. Tiratilli said he hopes to review 96 possible undervotes and one overvote, votes intended but not counted because the marking on the ballot suggested the voter wanted to choose neither or both candidates in discovery. It's possible somebody did mark an oval but no one recorded it. Something like that would be found in the discovery recount, he said. You can notice it, but it's not an official change they can make without a full recount. Michael said she's reviewing whether the absentee ballots received so far can be counted before the 2-week window closes. Tiratilli said he's willing to wait to preserve voter anonymity, which could be compromised if individual votes are published online. I want to make sure we do our utmost to ensure the integrity of the process, he said. It's going to keep people engaged in the idea of what's going on in local government, and for me, that's a good thing, regardless of the outcome. And the next story is entitled, Renner Excited About Council. Mayor touts fiscally conservative voices of city's aldermen. By Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Ward 1 Alderman Kevin Lower wonders whether there will be a fiscal conservative voice to replace his when he leaves the Bloomington City Council at the end of the month. I don't know if that is going to happen, said Lower the day after losing Tuesday's mayoral race to one-term incumbent Terry Renner. That's up to the community. They voted. Lower did not seek re-election as alderman so he could challenge Renner. Unfortunately, I don't think we have a strong representation as far as conservative viewpoint, said Lower. Renner, who won by a margin of 6,038 votes to 4,644 disagreed. "I think we've got a lot of fiscally conservative voices," said Renner. "Conservative means to be prudent with your finances, and we've always had balanced budgets. We've always come in under budget. We have very low per capita debt." Renner added, "We are going to continue to be very prudent, but what we're not going to have, essentially, is someone voting no and never offering solutions." The mayor said he is very excited about our new team, adding that history will be made when the new council is sworn in May 1st. "For the first time in the history of Bloomington, we're going to have a majority of women on the council," he said. On Tuesday, downtown businessman Jamie Mathey recaptured the council seat he lost to Lower in April 2013. Mathey defeated self-described fiscal conservative Susan Feldkamp, 737 to 418, to represent Ward 1 in South Bloomington. Mathey and Kimberly Bray will be the new faces on the council. Bray will be the new Ward 9 alderman, replacing Jim Fruin, who did not seek re-election. She received 746 votes to defeat two other self-described fiscal conservatives, Greg Rodriguez with 556 votes and Sheherjar Mufti, 363. Incumbents Mboka Mumbawe of Ward 3, Joni Painter of Ward 5, and Scott Black of Ward 7 retained their seats. "What I think we have is different perspectives on the council, but I think they are perspectives that can come together on a wide variety of issues, including economic development," said Renner. Renner said economic development and fixing the streets will be top priorities in his next term. He wants to see the city move forward with getting requests for proposals, develop the site of the demolished former Mennonite Hospital Electrolux headquarters at 807 North Main Street, which the city now owns. Other top economic development priorities include assisting Eastland Mall's owners, who are dealing with the loss of several retailers, to reinvent the shopping center, and searching for a strong anchor in downtown Bloomington, he added. "That could be any number of possibilities, but the private sector has been interested in a downtown hotel conference center by the U.S. Cellular Coliseum," said Renner. "As I have said many times, any project has to pay for itself." In the election, Renner won 33 of the city's 52 precincts, predominantly in the central, northwest, northeast, and far east parts of the city. Both Lower and Renner agreed that President Donald Trump's increasing unpopularity affected their campaigns. "I think it may have hurt me a bit because a lot of the national issues came into the local scene where they don't really belong," said Lower. "I don't think there is any question that it helped me and the people who were offering a positive message for moving Bloomington forward rather than just complaining and offering no solution," said Renner. Lower said he tried to be businesslike in his disagreements, adding, "This business of being so visceral, I don't think it leans toward any kind of civil discourse." He added that he is uncertain about his future in politics. "It's really up to the people," said Lower. "I am here at their request. If enough people want me to do something, I will try." Lower, who sells cars at Anderson Ford in Clinton and is a freelance professional pilot and flight instructor, said he still has a lot of other things to do, including flying airplanes. "I plan to get back in the airplane at some point and do what I do best," he said. The next story is headlined, "Conviction Reversed in Death of Firefighter." Court, Hudson Crass, not reckless homicide. By Edith Brady Lunny. Springfield. The reckless homicide conviction of a semi-trailer truck driver accused of killing Hudson firefighter Chris Brown in a 2013 crash has been reversed by the 4th District Appellate Court. In its ruling issued Wednesday, the court found that the state's evidence against Mansour Shakirov fell far short of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that he caused the death of the 39-year-old Brown. The truck, driven by Shakirov, struck and killed Brown as he and other emergency workers were responding to an accident on an icy stretch of Interstate 39. The best that can be said of the state's case is that defendant may have been inattentive for a few seconds, perhaps adjusting his radio or engaging in some similar activity, and then failed to realize the left lane was blocked as he unsuccessfully attempted to brake his huge semi at night on an icy highway in blowing snow, said the ruling. Shakirov's lawyer, Chris Graham, said Wednesday, "We argued from the beginning that this was nothing more than a tragic accident. We're glad the appellate court affirmed that." Shakirov, who was 29 and living in Spokane, Washington at the time of his 2014 conviction, has completed his 4-year prison term. The reversal of his conviction and sentence would remove the felony from his record and clear his name, said Graham. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers said, "By all accounts, this was a tragic accident that everyone wishes had not happened. The issue was whether it crossed the line from a negligent accident to a reckless accident." The prosecutor said his office will review the ruling and consult with the state appellate prosecutor's office to determine if the state Supreme Court would be asked to review the decision. The conviction followed an emotional trial where fellow firefighters testified about the crash that claimed the life of the career Bloomington firefighter who was serving as a volunteer for the Hudson Department when he was killed. Brown left a wife and 2 young sons. The appellate court ruled that jurors should not have heard evidence about Shakirov's violation of a federal rule that requires drivers to rest after being on the road a maximum of 14 hours each day. The violation that occurred the day before the crash was irrelevant, said the opinion. The court concluded that this record contains not a shred of evidence that defendant was fatigued at the time of the accident. Another shortfall in the state's case was the lack of expert testimony on the noise witnesses would have heard as the truck approached Brown, who was standing on the highway when he was struck. What jurors may have known from their experience about the sound of squealing tires on dry pavement should not have been part of their decision-making process in this case, said the court. The next story is entitled "Pair, First Black Representatives" by Derek Bay. Normal. Chamberlain Cummings and Arlene Jose didn't set out to make history. "It was always kind of a no-brainer for me to eventually run for office," Cummings said Wednesday. "It was never about me being the first anything." But, by all accounts, they will be the first black members of the Normal City Council and Normal Township's Board of Trustees, respectively. "It truly hit me last night. I thought, oh my, there is history being made here in Normal," said Jose. "Young people in this community will be able to look around and see people who look like them and have a seat at the table." Cummings, a 34-year-old State Farm business architect, will replace Cheryl Gaines on the council after finishing third for 3 seats in Tuesday's election. Hosea, a Normal Planning Commission member and retired Illinois State University Dining Services director, finished third for 4 seats on Township Board. Both women thanked the community, their supporters, and previous black leaders for making their wins possible. "It speaks to the type of community so many of us want, a community that values diversity and is truly inclusive and welcoming," Hosea said. "Bloomington is my hometown and that of my late father, and the pride and the sense of, wow, we have really evolved as a community, is tremendous." She dedicated the victory to her 90-year-old mother, who moved to Bloomington at 12 years old and still lives in town. "She grew up part of her childhood in the Mississippi Delta, and I know the environment that she grew up in and the messages that society told her," Hosea said. This win is for her and all the women who came before me, and for the black struggle. She added that residents of all colors should visit the McLean County Museum of History to learn about the history of black residents in Bloomington Normal. I stand upon many shoulders in this moment, local shoulders of Mr. Henry Gay and Mr. Merlin Kennedy. I got to meet the late U.S. Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones. She was an inspiration, Cummings said. I wish my grandfather was here to celebrate this moment. It is bittersweet in that sense. Both women said they cherished the opportunity to visit Tuesday night with Meta Mickens Baker, the first black member of McLean County Unit 5's school board. I grabbed their hands and raised their hands with mine, Hosea said, and I thought, this is normal. Normal Mayor Chris Koos, who has served as mayor or council member since 2001, said, it's past time that this happened. I'm not saying that makes us a racist community or there weren't good candidates in the past, but the council makeup reflects the community more than it has in the past, he said. Cummings stepped up and did a good campaign. I think she'll do a great job. Cummings said her goal as a council member is now to be a voice for voices who haven't been heard and need a louder soundboard. That includes black residents, but also elderly and poor residents, she added. I owe it not only to those people, but all constituents, to do my best, serve humbly, and give it my all, she said. Yesterday we made great history, but it's one chapter in the history others made before, Hosea said. There will be other chapters to follow. The next article is entitled, Bond Set for Robbery Suspect, Search Ongoing for Liquor Store Robber, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. A Bloomington man was formally charged Wednesday with armed robbery in connection with a holdup at a West Bloomington service station. Prosecutors say Darrell Scott, 29, entered Freedom Oil, 1802 West Market Street, about 6 a.m. Tuesday. He allegedly was armed with a handgun and demanded money from an employee. Authorities said he then fled on foot with an undisclosed amount of cash, but was arrested a short time later. No injuries were reported. He remains jailed in lieu of posting $35,035. Police said they were not seeking any other suspects. Meanwhile, Normal police are still investigating last week's armed robbery at University Liquors at 706 Beaufort Street, near the Illinois State University campus. About 3:32 p.m. March 30th, a man wearing a mask entered the store demanding money while armed with a handgun, according to Normal police. He ran north from the business with an undisclosed amount of cash, police said. No employees were injured. The suspect was described as a man of medium build, about 5 feet 4 to 5 feet 8 inches tall, wearing a dark hoodie, dark pants, white tennis-style shoes, and an orange mask. Anyone with information about the robbery is asked to contact Detective Brad Park at 309-454-9527 or McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. Here's a story entitled, IWU All In for Fundraising. Day of Games Events Raises Awareness for Alumni Donations, by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. Fundraising was only one purpose of Wednesday's day-long All In for Wesleyan at Illinois Wesleyan University. Today is also a spirit day, explained Dirk Behrens, Wesleyan Fund Chair for the IWU Alumni Association. Both dollars and donors are important, but today it's about alumni and students, said Beth Keegan, director of the Wesleyan Fund. It's a great day to celebrate everything that makes Illinois Wesleyan special. The idea is to raise awareness of the importance of alumni support and get students excited about becoming future donors. That's why, in addition to efforts to connect with alumni, parents, and other friends of the university through phone calls, emails, and social media, there were games and contests to reach out to current students. It's easier to educate them about the importance of giving back while they are still on campus, said Keegan. Freshman Morgan McCain of Libertyville joined fellow music theater majors in making a short video in support of All In. The longer I'm here, the more I love being at this university, said McCain, who wore a large green hat and held a Titan cutout in the picture. She hopes to be a donor after graduation. Meanwhile, members of IWU's cheerleading squad used their teamwork skills to put together a supersized Connect Four type game as part of the activities in the Memorial Center. We just help out when there's stuff that involves school spirit, said sophomore Alyssa Kaufman of Bloomington, a graphic design major who is captain of the squad. This is the epitome of school spirit. Tuition only covers about 70% of the cost of a student's education at IWU, said Behrens, and donors help bridge that gap. Nearly every student at IWU receives some sort of financial aid, Keegan said. I could not have come to Wesleyan if I did not have the Wesleyan Fund support, said Behrens. By early evening, $487,459 had been raised from 1,428 donors, Keegan said. Last year, $539,882 was raised from 1,940 donors during the All In campaign, according to Keegan. This was the fifth All In event. The day included several challenges to encourage donations during the 24-hour period that began at 12:01 a.m. Wednesday. The first challenge came from 1962 graduate Dorothea Bilder, who pledged to match donations dollar for dollar up to $100,000. That goal total was reached by early afternoon. That was followed by a challenge from the Alumni Association Board to give $40,000 if 200 more alumni made donations. Norb and Linda Gross issued a challenge to donate $50,000 if 100 donors made a gift to the Parent Fund. That fund is used to help students who lose a parent while they are attending IWU. There also were various challenges between athletic teams and Greek fraternity sorority organizations. Members of the class of 2017 are being encouraged to donate $20.17. Money from the Senior Fund will be used to install a new bike rack outside of Hanson Student Center. The next story is entitled BHS Considering Expansion for Music Programs by Julia Evelsizer. Bloomington. Bloomington High School is looking at a $7.5 million addition to accommodate growing interest in music spurred by changes made years ago to fifth grade band and orchestra programs. The project still is under consideration by the Bloomington District 87 School Board and the District Facilities Committee, said District Superintendent Barry Riley. The extension would be built on the southeast side of BHS near the student parking lot before the 2018-19 school year. Riley estimates the project would cost around $7.5 million. The timing is a little challenging given our financial times, but our financial struggles relate more to education funding than building funds, said Riley. We stay on top of building projects, and that has put us in a good position to do something like this. I think we could do it without a negative impact on the tax rate. Riley said the district could avoid a tax hike by extending some outstanding debt for several more years and reducing a health life safety fund tax levy to offset any possible increase. He said some money also could come from a tax increment financing district, the Empire Street Corridor Redevelopment Project Area, which includes BHS and the Empire Crossing and Tawanda Plaza shopping centers. In a TIF district, the increase in property tax revenue generated by improvements in the district is diverted from the taxing bodies into a fund earmarked for economic development within the district. Riley said the sudden surge in musical interest at BHS is a result of changes made to the fifth grade band and orchestra programs several years ago. This year's freshman group was the first group of fifth graders to be bused to the junior high every day before school for band and orchestra, said Riley. The fifth grade band change allowed students to study music 5 days a week instead of three, practice with individualized and large groups, and get a better feel for the junior high school building before sixth grade. Because of the improvements, more students flock to join the programs. Once those students start high school, the band size could grow from 150 students to more than 200, Riley said. In addition to the new addition, the current band room would be remodeled to accommodate the larger orchestra, and the current orchestra room would change to the chorus room. We're excited, said Riley. We certainly value the role fine arts plays in education. Studies show students involved in these programs tend to do better in school and socially make more friends. And here's a story entitled Blue Bow Campaign Activities Scheduled by Pantograph Staff. Bloomington. Children's Home Plus Aid, which offers programs supporting Central Illinois parents in times of family stress and crisis, will kick off its Blue Bow campaign with a balloon release at 10 a.m. Friday at 403 South State Street, Bloomington. The Blue Bow signifies hidden bruises of abused children and is the national symbol of child abuse prevention. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. In response to child abuse and neglect, Children's Home Plus Aid has a Parents Care Plus Share program, which offers positive parenting alternatives to break the cycle of abuse, said Regional Program Coordinator Darcy Thompson. Nearly 230 parents and 220 children in Central Illinois have participated in the program so far this year. The agency urges people to put a blue light bulb in their porch light during April to show support for prevention of child abuse and neglect. Other Blue Bow campaign events this month include Lego Family Fun Night, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. April 18th at Children's Home Plus Aid Scott Early Learning Center, 119 East Taylor Street, Bloomington. Food, games, and prizes are free and open to the public. Children's Discovery Museum Goes Blue, 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 22nd, at the museum at Uptown Circle in Normal. Museum staff will wear blue, decorate the museum with blue bows, and offer a blue bow craft. 7th Annual Taking Steps to End Child Abuse 5K Color Run 1 Mile Walk, 9 a.m. April 29th at Fairview Park in Normal. The event is in memory of Jack and Duncan Lichtenberg of Leroy, who died as victims of child abuse. The $35 fee for adult participants supports the Family Visitation Center, where families experiencing domestic violence or high-conflict divorce have a safe place to visit or transfer children between family visits. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for April 6th. Please stay tuned.